Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, the most unsettling thing has happened.
A single guest has arrived.
Yes. How could you possibly know?
They are lovely, but a bit world-weary and tired of it all.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And last night, you dreamt you appeared in public, hairless.
I do not want or wish to play this game anymore.
Welcome, my dear weary guest. Please come with me into the reading room and make yourself comfy on the overstuffed settee. I have for you a blanket woven by our Janet that's been warming by the fire, and a personalized hospitality tray filled with rich hot black tea, with honey from our hives, and sweet cream from Stefan's pretty cow, Mabel. There's also a selection of freshly baked cookies, biscuits, and wee pies that Natasha picked up from Mrs. Miggins' pie shop in Phantom Forest. I know the world hasn't been everything we've all hoped for and deserved lately, so this evening, I've prepared a rather intimate and dreary ghost ship story for us to get lost in. Dreary in that rare, comforting way it can sometimes be. You understand, I'm sure. Now, Irma and her pet kitten, Pussifer, are under the care of Nanny Goat. The wolf pups are dozing near the hearth. And Mr. Darling is tending the fireplace. There will be no interruptions. Please, you just relax now. Let us begin. Legend says that long ago, in the murky mists off the coast of Greenland, in the fall of the year 1775, the crewman of the whaling ship Herald spotted a glistening, ice-covered spectacle. the merchant ship, the Octavius. Missing since 1762. Nestled under a blanket of thick fog, in the early morning of the autumn of 1761, the gallant and glorious clipper ship, the Octavius, floated patiently in the dockyard of the River Thames. The majestic merchant ship had been fortified and fitted with every possible tool and creature comfort she would need for her long and treacherous journey to the Orient on an important trade mission. No eventuality was left unconsidered in the fastidious preparation. Sailors of every station shuffled heaps of cargo, additional daily provisions, and the enormous trunks of their own possessions onto the mighty ship in the hours before her scheduled departure. Loving family members gathered on the banks of the river to wave goodbye, while emotional others hurried down to the dock to quickly embrace and kiss their seafaring loved ones one more time. As with any maritime mission in those days, it was well understood that this kiss might be the last. The gathering fog, which should have lifted, thickened, and the air grew chilled as the fully rigged ship creaked into motion and drifted out of port. The Octavius was captained by an aged, seasoned, and daring man named Hendrik Vanderhuel, a bold and adventurous man whose brazen attitude often traveled in front of him. Vanderhuel, when he was a very young man, served as quartermaster under none other than Captain William Kidd, a privateer who was later relabeled as a pirate and hung for being so. So sure of the ship's success for this particular journey was the plucky captain that he brought along with him his fine wife and their young son. The massive ship was serviced by a valiant crew of 28 highly skilled men. The deep Atlantic Sea, within a few days, warmed a little, then warmed steadily as the ship, the Octavius, turned on its well-known path upon the waves and headed south. Feeling bright and optimistic, pretty Mrs. Vanderhuel braced and steadied herself on the upper deck of the heaving ship, clutching her young son to her side. As her kind eyes peered into the blue-gray distance, she took in the sheer power of the rolling sea. It was only the third day of their trip, which was expected to put their arrival in China, depending upon conditions, anywhere from 6 to 9 months away. A venture on the high seas, such as this, was almost certainly a life or death gamble. There could be punishing storms, lightning strikes, the possibility of an onboard spreading illness, spoiled food, threats of rogue waves and high winds blowing the ship off course, mutiny from the crew. And since such ships were commonly laden with luxury goods, the very real danger of being pillaged by pirates. In times gone by, there were no shortcuts such as the Suez or Panama canals to reach China. So the route upon the open ocean was one that thousands of ships had made and failed to make for hundreds of years now. The long, controlled drift would send the sailing vessels past the coast of Portugal, along the coast of the sprawling continent of Africa, and down through the Cape of Good Hope. If all went well, the ship would then travel eastward, crossing the expanse of the Indian Ocean, and make its zigzagging way through the surrounding waters of Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines, located in the South China Seas, before finally making port on the coast of mainland China. The three-masted schooner, the Octavius, the following year in 1762, reached its destined port of call in China, and apparently she arrived in good repair with all of her wares and a healthy and happy crew on board. Her cargo was believed to be that of coffee and corn, but more likely, she also carried a considerable amount of silver bullion as export payment for Chinese goods, because China had little interest in European items at the time. That was until the British East India Company began bringing along a little something rare, precious, illicit, and illegal: opium. The Octavius, though, was not known to be concealing this particular contraband, and it is recorded that within perhaps only a few days, the visiting ship was emptied of her delivered goods and silver, and refilled with crates and crates of exotic tea, rich silken textiles, delicate porcelain ceramics, and exceptional fur pelts. Then the determined old captain, his precious wife and son, and their entire manly crew quite literally turned that ship around to depart for home. As the tall ship was steered away from port and began drifting on the warm waters of the South China Sea, Captain Vanderhul stood staring down at the most detailed navigational map available at the time. The faster his ship full of goods returned to England, the faster everyone would be paid, and the faster he and his crew could return to their private lives for a bit. He thought of his other four children waiting at home. He thought of his crew and their families. If he could just shorten the trip, he'd be a kind of hero in everyone's eyes. He knew this. thudding his rough knuckle upon the worn paper map. His mind was made up. He ordered his first mate to turn the good ship Octavius east. The unseasonably warm weather for this time of year emboldened the skilled old sailor. The Octavius would not be returning to England by retracing the prolonged route it had taken to arrive in China. Instead, the ship, its captain, his family, and crew would attempt a route that, as of yet, had never been traversed successfully by anyone. Not a single ship of any kind had made it through the Northwest Passage, also referred to as the Canadian Arctic. The Northwest Passage, a route that connected the Atlantic to the Pacific by way of the Arctic Ocean, located in northern Canada, had been the dream and passion of sailors, adventurers, and explorers as far back as the times of Christopher Columbus in the late 1400s. If a path through this hazardous and unpredictable waterway could be found, it would cut the sailing time to and from Asia in half. It seems obvious. If the weather is only barely freezing, just go along in the waters that seem less icy, and before you know it, you'll be across the top of Canada, past Greenland, and headed for home. For hundreds of years, this kind of optimistic, simplified thinking is the very thing that got thousands of people killed. History books from these early times are rife with stories of half-mad, half-frozen men driven to scraping lichen from jutting rocks with their bare teeth and eating their own shoe leather, just trying to stay alive. The most obvious problem was the maps. Most of this land in the Arctic had never been explored thoroughly. It was broken up into countless frozen islands and dotted with huge floating ice sheets that looked like land. What was there one month might be gone entirely the next. The only inhabitants were the Inuit people, who had survived by knowing the land, the seas, the weather, and by moving accordingly, understanding their habitat, and respecting the changes to all of it. Various expeditions of groups of explorers over the centuries would make their way through parts of the passage. Many were lost, their ships splintered to bits by the creeping ice floes. Those who survived surveyed what terrain they could cover and made note of what the Inuit people told them. From these sparse findings, new maps would be printed. Sadly, no matter how intense the endeavors, most of these maps were still speculative at best. In the late 1700s, even the maps of the better-known land masses were vague and wildly incorrect. Some were still embellished with a few of the old-world sea monsters. But in regards to the Northwest Passage, the truth was, the most deadly foes of all were the shifting ice and the bone-cracking cold. For months, the Octavius sailed northward along the coast of China, headed toward Siberia, and all the while, the temperatures dropped. During these past times, China, or Asia proper, was labeled on maps as Chinese Tartary, and Siberia was called Great Tartary. Tartary being the word Europeans used for areas that hadn't been explored by them. They literally had no concept of what the interior terrain of these poorly defined, sprawling land masses entailed, and very little also about the people who lived there. The meager maps of the lower Arctic did have one extremely exact label that was often printed in big, bold letters. They read, "The AM Pole of the Greatest Cold." In the now plunging temperatures and blustering winds, the ship reached the Bering Sea and the thinner waterway known as the Bering Strait. The ancient landmass that existed there 20,000 years ago and connected Russia to Alaska had been named in retrospect Beringia. The waterway that appeared later, named after it, is the Bering Strait. To paint more vividly for you a picture of just how far north the Octavius was venturing, numerically speaking, the equator, of course, encompasses the Earth at the 0 degree parallel or latitude. Heading north on the globe, the United States is roughly at the 39th parallel. England is roughly at the 52nd. Alaska, or the Bering Strait, sits on the 63rd parallel. And the Northwest Passage covers an area of between roughly 70 and 80 degrees north. This is where the ship was headed. The North Pole, a literal ice cap at this time of year, where no ship can physically reach, is only a little ways beyond, just 10 degrees further, at the 90th parallel, the very top of the world. Under steely gray skies, the Octavius groaned and barely crept along through the perilous Arctic waterways. Thick sheets of damming ice had become so prevalent that the mighty ship now nearly slowed to a stop. The crew, miserably cold, did the best they could do, wearing all of their clothing, eating rationed bits of food, and trying to keep a few stoves on board lit. Mrs. Vanderhuel, full of worry and doubt, bundled up with her shivering son in her husband's frigid quarters. The captain, with his hands stiff from the biting cold, stood at the helm of the inching Octavius, peering through the frosted over lens of his scope, hoping to see some Inuit tribesmen in the distance, with the thought of calling out to them for help. But there was no one, not a single soul. Only the bitter wind, the vast blue glacial landscape, and the ghostly white glow of the fading sun. Within an hour, an Arctic storm of blowing snow and racing sub-zero winds tilted the great ship, halting her abruptly and locking her in the ice. Her sails, now so brittle, they cracked and broke into falling pieces. The few crewmen on deck, who had tried to hold their stations, suddenly stopped. Their last damp breaths turned to ice crystals in their lungs. Their mouths hung open in disbelief, and the surface of their eyes became fixed and frozen. In the following moments, the men below were seized up in the same surreal fashion. Pain and terror marked every face. The ship was now one with the ice, gripped by it, and claimed by it entirely. On October 11th, coasting along on the chilled waters of the Baffin Bay, west of Greenland, the whaling ship Herald was heading home. A tired night watchman spied something odd under the hazy moonlight. A distant, tall, and shadowy figure, tilting on the icy waves. He rang his bell and called out to his shipmates. Several men scrambled from their posts to see what all the fuss was about. The first mate hastily cleaned his spyglass to bring the eerie thing into view.
"A ship! A ship!"
he cried out, then quietly said,
"She's limping."
On approach, the growing crowd of sailors and their keen captain could not believe their eyes. The long board on the port side of the frozen ship bore the name Octavius. A chill went through every man who knew that she'd long been missing. The captain's serious gray eyes swept the face of every man standing before him, with many unwilling to meet his gaze. A handful of crooked broom straws was thrust in front of every man. The owners of the shortest five straws were set down on the waves in a tiny rowboat and sent toward the Octavius. The wary men hauled themselves up stiff, wet ropes and crossed the blackened deck of the now mythical ship. In only mere moments, they saw the frosted-over corpses of the midshipmen, frozen to the floor, encased in a solid tangle of ropes, with broken boards and bits of the sails fused to their blue skin. In a rush of horror, the frightened five dashed below deck, their swinging lanterns lighting one petrified face after another, as they darted in a panic to the captain's quarters. A single dead sailor lay frozen across the base of the door. In a crazed joint effort, the intrusive crew lunged and clawed at the ice-riggered cadaver, not knowing if the cracking sound of him breaking loose was the shattering of the ice, or the snapping of his bones. The yellow glare of their dangling lanterns flew around the icy tomb of the captain's room. On the glistening floor, suspended in time, a grieving mother lay slumped over and bonded to her dead child. The polar ice had long since cemented them into one. Alone at his desk, Captain Vanderhul sat, his eyes of solid ice fixed open, his skin the color of the frozen sea, a quilled pen standing upright in the grip of his gloved hand. In a frenzied terror, the living sailors pried the long-dead man's logbook, ripping it free from under his ice-hardened sleeve. Then, bolting from the floating crypt, the fleeing men flung themselves over the side of the tall ship and fell into a heap in their shifting vessel below. When they thrashed about in the tipping boat, a chunk of the inner pages of the logbook splashed into the frigid sea as they madly paddled away. The ruined cover of the lost ship's log had only the last page stitched to its tattered spine. In the dying captain's shaky handwriting, only the date was written: November 11th, 1762. The successful crossing by ship of the frozen Northwest Passage would not happen for another 144 years. In the year 1906. Many a man returned from the Arctic in the years the Octavius had been missing. Many a man swore that he had seen the ship, either frozen in the unforgiving landscape or floating serenely adrift on the frosty waves. Some claimed they saw her captain standing alone and peering through his scope on the prow of the shadowy ship. Once the men of the Herald abandoned her out of sheer fright, some reported seeing her again, alone and drifting on the polar seas. But she's yet to be found. Do you believe she's there, my lovely? My guest? Oh, Mr. Darling, look. Our dear guest has fallen asleep. Oh, how sweet they look.
Sweet, indeed.
Oh, no. Don't eat this one. Besides, we've just had the carpets cleaned.
We cannot mollycoddle all of them, madam. We have a reputation to uphold.
Oh, you're right. Please, gently lower them into an open grave without waking them, please. Then they can at least have a good fright.
Done. Would you like me to put a cookie in their pocket?
Oh, yes, please. Here. Here's a wormy one.
This message is for you, my dear guest. It's important to me that you know that you are welcome and valued here. Why? Because I know that you are a real person. And I'd like you to know that in spite of what you may hear in the village, that I am a real person too. I am not an AI-generated thing, pieced together by robbing the work of others and presented by a soulless algorithm meant to spew a random flood of content at you that only masquerades as quality entertainment. I choose the subjects I think you'll like. I diligently research the topics using only reputable books and sites. I alone write every single word you hear. I choose each piece of music and every eerie fun sound. I am the Midnight Library. I am the Reading Room. I am every character. I am the Broom and Fang Pub, the fog that floats in the graveyard, and every Lady Gravedigger. And I am honored that you enjoy what I create. So I will ask you to support the Midnight Library, as many of my beloved friends do. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary, and I'll meet you there. Thank you.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.